Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Publicly funded vouchers for students who attend private schools have always been a controversial topic, and that's certainly the case here in North Carolina. While voucher defenders tout them as the ultimate tool for providing parents with freedom of choice, the state's lax regulatory structure often means that we know little about how taxpayer funds are being spent and what kind of outcomes they're generating. A few weeks back, I got a chance to discuss this situation with Professor Jane Wettick of the Children's Law Clinic at Duke University Law School. Wettick, who also recently authored an essay for NC Policy Watch calling for better oversight of homeschooling, says North Carolina must do more to hold voucher schools accountable for producing quality outcomes if we're going to keep sending them hundreds of millions of public tax dollars. Well, Professor Jane Wettick, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you have a new report out, School Vouchers in North Carolina, 2014 to 2020. The big experiment continues. Can you tell us about some of what you found?
Sure. As the dates show, we've had North Carolina vouchers for 6 years now, and this program was initiated by the General Assembly under the name of the Opportunity Scholarship Program, and the design of the program is to provide a government subsidy to assist families with paying tuition costs at private schools. The eligible families are those with low and moderate incomes. The upper limit right now is about $64,000 a year. So families in that income range who prefer private education can take a $4,200 voucher and use it to pay for some or all of the tuition at a chosen private school.
So how big of a program are we talking about here? How many people are actually taking advantage of it, and what's it costing us?
So right now, there are a little over 12,000 children who across the state are in the program. And we have spent to date just about almost $160 million on the program. And the expectation is that if it continues, we will spend up to about $1 billion over the first 10 years of the program. We're actually not spending quite as much as the General Assembly appropriated for the program. The usage of the program has been a little bit lower than was expected. There's a little bit of a reserve right now.
Now, obviously, school vouchers have been controversial for decades. We've had court challenges to these on many grounds, but right now in North Carolina, the deal is these have been declared constitutional. And even though we're giving public dollars to religious institutions for now, at least for the foreseeable future, that's been deemed to be constitutional, right?
That's right. Actually, the issue about providing the tuition money to religious education was settled by the United States Supreme Court after an early voucher program was challenged in Ohio quite some time ago. And the Supreme Court determined that as long as the money was being funneled through parents who were making the choice and that they could choose religious education or secular education, the U.S. Supreme Court held that was not a violation of our First Amendment prohibition against the government establishment or support of religion. Then in North Carolina, there was a challenge under the North Carolina Constitution, arguing that several of the constitutional provisions in North Carolina's Constitution were violated, but the North Carolina Supreme Court ultimately rejected those arguments.
So it's here to stay, at least for the foreseeable future. Talk to us about what are some of the main findings. As I gather, it has proved at least effective in one regard, and that's that the parents have some sort of choice. They're making use of that choice in many, many instances.
Absolutely. And I would say that's the success of the program. If you have a philosophic belief that parents should be the sole arbiters of the education of their children, that the public doesn't really have anything to say about the education of children, then the program has been a success. It has allowed families, some families anyway, to choose an education for their children that is essentially out of compliance with the educational standards that the state of North Carolina has set. So one of the things we see in the numbers is that religious education has been the most popular choice by about 90% of the users. And a good portion of those religious schools are using a biblically based curriculum that is out of sync with the standard course of study in North Carolina. And not all religious schools are out of sync, but a good percentage of them are.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that really sort of gets to one of the key findings of your report is has to do with sort of the accountability of what it is we're actually teaching kids and whether they're receiving a valuable education. Some of these biblically based curricula obviously teach things that we know are scientifically not true. And there are questions have been raised about whether that's an appropriate use of public money that's supposed to go to public education.
Exactly. And so that's when I said it depends on your philosophy. Mm-hmm. And if you believe that parents should be the complete arbiters of their children's education, so that if they believe that the Bible is a science textbook, then they are free to pass that belief on to their children. Other people believe that the public has a stake in the education of all children, that we all should want our children to grow up to be educated in the principles that are more commonly accepted scientifically, historically, and politically, and that we shouldn't allow public money to be used to educate children in a way that conflicts with what the, for example, the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction and the State Board of Education have determined are the standard principles of education, the standards of education that we've adopted.
You know, in traditional public schools, Jane, we hear a lot about accountability. We hear about, are we going to make our schools perform? Are they going to lift our children up? Are they going to meet their ABC standards or whatever in order to make progress each year? I gather that's not really a part of the voucher scheme.
No, it's not. And it's not really a part of our public education scheme, but is particularly acute when we are using public dollars. So the program was designed so that schools who accept voucher students are required to test them annually using a nationally standardized test. But it can be any test that the school chooses. They don't have to report scores to the public. There's a provision in the legislation that says that schools with more than 25 voucher students have to report their data in an aggregate form. But the State Education Assistance Authority that administers the program determined that the data that was coming in this aggregate form was really meaningless. There was no way to report it in any way that was meaningful. And there was certainly no way to compare those students to public school students because the data just isn't in a form that could produce any meaningful information. And so the Education Assistance Authority doesn't even collect the data anymore. So there's nothing coming to the public at all about how these students are doing. They may be gaining from when they were in public school, or they may be losing out from when they were in public school, but we have no way of knowing.
So my gosh, it's a lot of money being spent on something where we don't know what kind of results we're getting. I gather you do have some specific recommendations in the report as to how we might improve the law to provide for more accountability, to perhaps assure ourselves that we're getting good results for the children who are being educated this way.
Right. And I think we have an easy place to look. Almost every other state that has a voucher program similar to ours has more accountability. And so some of the things that they do, they're requiring schools to provide a curriculum that is at least equivalent to what the public schools offer. So we could do that, or they have an accreditation provision that requires schools to go through an accreditation process. So that's one thing we could do. We could require the students to take the same test that we require our public school students to take. That would be the standard end of grade tests. And then we would have comparison points. I think it's also important that we have just stronger oversight over these schools. We have chosen in North Carolina to have very, very little oversight over our private schools. So we could have a school that is consistently failing its students, and there's no mechanism to stop paying the voucher tuition payments to that school. No agency has any jurisdiction to say, wow, these kids are not being served in this school, but they can keep getting voucher payments. And I think having a mechanism that would prevent schools that are really not serving students well from continuing to participate in the program would be an important improvement.
It definitely is a must-read report. We urge our listeners to check it out. Can they find it online, Jane? The Children's Law Clinic at Duke University, I gather, would be a good place to look for it online?
Yes, they can find it. They can definitely find it there. www.childedlaw.org has a link there to the report.
Well, Professor Jane Wettick, thank you so much for being with us. The report is School Vouchers in North Carolina, 2014 to 2020. Thank you so much for your fine work. We'll check in again soon and hope that the General Assembly takes many of these recommendations to heart.
Thanks, Rob. It's been nice talking with you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news about COVID-19 at the State Department of Health and Human Services website, ncdhhs.gov. You can also check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. Please stay home and stay safe as best you can, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.